Since last year's proclamation from WotC that 2020 would be the year of Commander, there has been endless speculation. And now, finally, we are starting to get our first taste of Commander Collection Green and Commander Legends, along with many other long-awaited products. So which of our predictions have come true, and what new flavour is on offer? Welcome to Magic the Flavouring, the Magic the Gathering podcast, where we discuss all things magic flavour design and lore. I'm your host, Andy Mann.
Hello, this is Nathan Cancel.
And we have had the most amount of spoilers in a two-week period that I think we've had for a very long time. And I am stressed out. I don't know about you, Nathan.
Yeah, well, we literally said this yesterday of like, I was tuning into the command zone when we had set after set after set and being like, oh, stop complaining about how much stuff you've got to do. And then I've spent the whole week kind of complaining about how much stuff there is to do.
Yeah. And we already know. So just to put a bit of a timestamp on this episode, we're recording this on Saturday, 29th of August. So we already have quite a lot of spoilers. We do have some stuff for Zendikar, which got released via Wizards of the Coast that we're probably not going to discuss too heavily today. And we know we're going to get even more information on Tuesday. So by the time that you're listening to this, if we release this on time on the Monday, you will probably already be aware of a few more things than we are now. And if you're listening to this later in the week, next week, you definitely know more than we know here in the past. So yeah, it's just absolutely crazy. We're just going to crack on because there is so much to get through.
There is so much to talk about, yeah.
It's all very varied and it's all really cool. Like, I've got to say, as much as we kept kind of getting reminded, I kind of feel like over the past couple of weeks, I've been reminded at how little storyline there is. There just seems to be like, there's been an ebb and flow of people on like social media having discourse about where's the magic story, and then sometimes people forget and then it will kind of flare up again. And there's been a recent flare up of people going, well, there was no Theros story. I didn't really realize the Ikoria book existed. Where's the magic story going to go? And I've been feeling a bit down about the flavor in the game. And then they had all these releases and they're all super flavorful and they're all super like good for the kind of players that we are, that I'm reinvigorated. As much as we don't have a story, like all of this stuff's really cool. So I think we're just going to crack on. We're going to start with the two secret lair drops that got given to us about 2 weeks ago. So this is Secret Lair Prime Slime and Secret Lair Every Dog Has Its Day. Let's start with the Prime Slime. So it's all ooze creatures except for the Void Slime. So the cards in this set are Necrotic Ooze, Acidic Slime, the Mimeoplasm, and Void Slime. I think those are the ones that are on there. And then the art is by Wizard of Barge, a.k.a. Dakota Cates. But they go by Wizard of Barge, and that's what the artist's name is on the cards as well. I'm really excited about this secret lair. I didn't buy it in the end, but I was excited to see that it was out there, and I might be picking up singles if they are going in the future.
I didn't realize it was a 2-day window. So I was like, oh, absolutely. And I went back, I was like, oh, I've missed it by like 2 hours. I was really, because I think in terms of artwork, I put down in my notes that this is very similar to like the full sleeve secret lair, of where they've kind of chosen an art direction that's resonant outside of Magic IPs. And it, as you've put down, it's surprisingly not the artist for Adventure Time. It's very litchy, like the Necrotic Ooze does look a little bit like the Lich, and it has that kind of visceral style to it.
Well, it was the vampires that are on some of the cards, or whatever, like, I suppose, like goblins and ghouls, had exactly the same sort of look as a lot of the vampires and like the Earl of Lemongrab from the TV show Adventure Time. And I was surprised to learn that Coach Cates wasn't an artist on that show, because the art style is very similar, which I'm totally into. It's been a bit divisive, this one. I remember when it flared up, so many people in our circle of Magic players were like, that's rad, really like it. So it's got like, Adventure Time sort of look. All the colours are like late 80s, early 90s, like skater culture colours. So it's all like really neon pinks, blues, and yellows, like really sort of grabs your attention. And then lots of people on Twitter were like, no, I really like the reprint of the cards, but what is this art style? And that really bugged me, man, because I like the art style, but because like this is... If there's any one product, right, and I loathe myself for saying this, but if there's any one product from Wizards of the Coast that isn't actually for everyone every time they do it, it is the secret lairs, right? Like, we've heard this term of saying, well, this product isn't for you, this product isn't for everyone. And most people, like, everyone rightly goes, well, that seems a little bit redundant, because it's usually in reference to the price of the product. But with the secret lairs, it's not to do with the price of the product necessarily. It's the fact that, although sometimes that is the case, but it's mostly to do with the fact that they're trying these new art styles and these new sort of directions with cards that, of course, they're not going to be everyone's cup of tea because they're so out there and they're so far removed from what Magic cards tend to look like normally that I think it would be wrong if they tried to make these products for everyone. So as much as I'm probably going to get vilified for saying that the secret lairs aren't really for everyone, I don't think they are or they should be. And I kind of get a bit annoyed when people go, oh, but why do they have to do it in that art style? It's because it's a secret lair.
Right? Like, we've said this about quite a few of them. And obviously we're not the voice of reason. And once we've said it once, you should listen and shut up. Obviously, I don't mean it. But like, it's funny how many times we have to say this. It's almost like it gets to a point of where you need to expect the unexpected from secret lairs. And as much as it might not suit your liking, you need to expect there's going to be about a 50-50 chance that it won't. You know, like most secret lairs, I think, rub up someone the wrong way. And I think that's good. If there was any secret lair that, I don't say universally liked is a bad thing, but if there's very few secret lairs that are ever going to be universally panned. And realistically, they are going to be divisive. They are going to sit one side or another. And as you say, they're not like a mainstay standard set or anything like that. Like, it is literally, you blink and you miss it kind of thing. If you have to be with your finger on the pulse and pay attention to it. So it is one of these things that you can very easily kind of forget about. And obviously, considering the last couple of weeks of spoilers, it was something that one of them didn't interest me, and it's already put to the back of my mind, you know? So it doesn't really, like, it's not a slap in the face, really. It's more like an offering that you don't have to pick up. And if you don't pick it up, that's fine. You don't complain to the chef about the food that you didn't order off the menu.
And I think the difference between this one, and sorry, just to backtrack, the card I missed off was Scavenging Ooze. I knew there was a fifth card, Scavenging Ooze. The thing about that's different from this secret layer and other secret layers that kind of fall in the same category in terms of their reprints is that none of these cards, as far as I'm aware, are so beyond reach in terms of their reprints and their pricing. It's not like when they did the secret layer Ultimate Edition with the fetch lands. And that people went nuts about that, because that was one of those products where when they said, oh, this product isn't for everyone, what they actually meant is that they didn't expect everyone to be able to afford it.
Yeah, because everyone wants fetch lands, you know?
Exactly. It's not a stylistic choice.
Yeah, exactly.
So there we go. So that's Necrotic Ooze. There is one of the cards I know caught everyone's attention because it was actually very clever. And some people, again, really didn't like this because of the meta direction that it went.
Is it, right? Yeah, of course.
So
yeah.
The card Void Slime has a flavor text, which the flavor text reads, in quotation marks, "Psychonic Rip," which in the context of the card,
because
this is an audio podcast, I keep forgetting. In the context of the card, it's a wizard being hit in the face with a hydro blast. So we're led to understand that this wizard is about to literally cast the card Cyclonic Rift, and he gets hit in the face because Void Slime is a counterspell, so you're countering the Cyclonic Rift. And it's such a little Alice in Wonderland spiral down the rabbit hole in terms of meta, because it's on a card, but it's referencing the card, but the card is the thing that counters it. That is just really genius. And something you noticed, which I didn't notice, and I genuinely think not many people did. I could be condescending a lot of people here, is that in the flavor text, in his kind of flub, flub, flub-like text, is the word Fibblethip, which again is just another reference that they just threw in. There's no reason for it.
He's totally
there.
Lost it inside a wizard's mouth as it's being void slimed out of a cyclonic rift. I mean, I think that's brilliant. Yeah, that was the tweet that I moaned about last week, not getting any love, because it was one of these things I'm like, oh, come on, this is cheap. That's the meta level that I'm like, oh, you've gone triple deep on the joke there. That's fantastic. I love it a lot. And I think, like, the thing about meta in real world is, if you're making it real world as in like IRL, like as in the, like our typical day-to-day world, I can understand that might detract a little bit from people's the fantastical separation they have from the real world when they play the game. The thing is, this is kind of almost setting its own weird plane of where, yes, it has a dumpster in the Scavenging Ooze, and yet it's kind of talking in terms of like what modern people would talk like and that kind of thing, but they're still kept within a fantasy. Like, this could, for all intents and purposes, be a very crazy neon plane where everything is, you know, super visceral, and wizards are your more typical cackling witches in a cauldron kind of thing. So I think it's fine. And again, like, where you're going with such a divisive art style, I think that it's better to make it grounded in real world, because then it gives it a bit more affection, like from a psychological point of view, when aesthetically it might, you know, divorce a little bit. So I don't know. I again, personal preferences aside, I think that it's very striking and it will be divisive. But I think that these, again, like with the Full Sleeves, these are the kind of directions Secret Lairs kind of should go in. The kind of cards they can't really print anywhere else. And to just see what the feedback is. And I get it. Yeah, like people might not necessarily like it. But then, you know, there's literally three other sets that were that were spoiled in the same week. So surely there are other things that you like.
Talking of Secret Lairs that people might not like... and are divisive. We now move on to our second Secret Lair reveal that we got in the past couple of weeks, and this is Secret Lair, Every Dog Has Its Day. So we got the very first Secret Lair, I think it was the first one, was the cats one, where they did all the cats throughout Magic, and they gave them kind of more chibi artwork or more stylistic artwork. This one is the dog's version. So there are four cards in this Secret Lair. So the four cards we have are Rest in Peace, Dig Through Time, Ancient Grudge, and Lightning Greaves. Now, people, this is where our little theory where we just espoused about how not every product is for everyone really actually comes full circle around to us, because by and large, people loved this Secret Lair. It's all cute dogs doing cute dog things. So on Rest in Peace, it's a dog just kind of like rolling around in the sun. In Dig Through Time, it's a dog literally digging in the sand. Ancient Grudge is a dog barking at itself in a mirror, which is a nice little kind of nod to, you know, that eternal struggle where dogs see their own reflection. And in Lightning Greaves, it's a dog chewing on a pair of lightning greaves.
Did you just say reflection, but R-U-F-F instead of R-E-F? Because that's
I didn't try to, but...
That's brilliant. That's maybe that's endeared that to me a little bit more now. I'm like, oh, okay, you know, like, maybe I don't mind the Ancient Grudge.
Well, now, okay, so this is a complete flip reverse from the Prime Slime, because whereas a lot of people were unsure about Prime Slime, but I know we and a lot of people in our circle loved it, everyone seemed to really love Every Dog Has Its Day, but I know we and a lot of people in our circle, I mean, I think this is potential... Oh, people are going to hate me.
I know, I think, hate the worst one, right?
I think this is potentially the cringiest set of cards I have ever seen, and they've done a My Little Pony set. This is so...
I can't believe that sentence, but yeah, absolutely. I agree. I agree.
I'm not even not a dog person, but like I feel like, have you seen that episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where Dennis Reynolds goes on the news and he's trying to like save his public opinion, like save public opinion of him, and he's about done it. So he's part of he's basically in the 24-hour news cycle and people hate him. So he goes on the news to try and smooth things over, and he does it. And then there's a dog in the studio and he goes, oh, I'm not a dog person. And then he goes a rant on about being dog people. And then the 24-hour cycle like rinses him and he becomes hated like instantly. I feel like that's what's going to happen to us. Yeah. I'm not a dog person. I like dogs. I just...
Okay, right, should we try and justify our opinions a little bit?
Well, just to give the background on the Secret Lair itself, it's going to be released on the 26th of August, which is International Dogs Day, apparently. And each of the dogs is named and based off of a WotC employee's dog. So before we start slagging off how the dogs look, they are actually real dogs who belong to real people. So Rest in Peace is Lucy. Dig Through Time is Shelby, Ancient Grudge is Hunter, and Lightning Greaves is Wesley. And we know their names.
Shelby and Hunter the wrong way around, just in case we get actually dog cases.
Yeah, okay. but the reason we know these names is because they are in the flavor text of each card. Nathan, do you want to have a crack at this one?
Yeah, right. So my main criticism, because I tend to have like knee-jerk instinctive reactions to things, and then I try and break down why I had that knee-jerk instinctive reaction. The cringe of this wasn't just because it felt like it was the thing we were worried about in M21, where things were going to get too twee. I don't mind Magic being kitsch and going like with the chibi route and going twee, but we already kind of did this very recently. The counterpoint to that is the fact that we did have a cat lair set, and then we do have a dog lair set for the Every Dog Has Its Day, so it balances out in that fashion, fair enough. In the same way I said before about you creates a slight dissonance when you talk in real world terminology on Magic cards, obviously the Prime Slime one having a bit of this talking kind of almost colloquially and having that metacle. I kind of don't like the fact that they not only made real people's dogs kind of into the flavor text, which reminds you of the real world nature of the dogs, and again it's almost like catching a glimpse of Earth and putting it onto a Magic card. That kind of aspect, I mean, as much as it is really cute, I do like the idea of it, it is kind of at that point pulling real world onto Magic cards, which I don't necessarily like quite as much. And also, it did kind of feel a little bit like they were I mean, my instinctive reaction was that it kind of felt like this was like unused art that they were trying to get into the set before and then they couldn't. I mean, maybe not, but that's the feeling that I got. And if that feeling was there, maybe they did it too soon after the introduction of M21 and maybe I had a little bit of fatigue. And then the other aspect that kind of gets me is then you have to think in terms of magic, like lore. Like a pug was kind of eugenically created by humans. So does that mean within whatever magic realm this is, whatever plane this is on, they also went through the same process of dog breeding? And then that creates such a crazy, like, I don't seem stupid, but I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it makes my brain kind of break a little bit because I'm like, you've got corgis and you've got pugs. And I'm like, but they wouldn't. I mean, the reason I kind of then stopped that is because you do get Thraben purebloods out of the Innistrad block. So there is literal. Confirmation that there are humans within magic planes that do breed dogs.
I would expect so.
But you know what I mean? It had too many notes of it that made it feel too real. And that when I say that I get why people felt a little bit of the suspension of disbelief was kind of broken when you put, a quote from a magic player in flavor text saying, oh, cyclonic, you know, like, fair enough. Yeah, the wizard might not necessarily do that. This in the same way does that for me, but on a meta level rather than an actual like active level. So
I think that was my justification. Yeah, I mean, it's odd because everything we said about the Prime Slime, about how people need to realize that products aren't for them and like the secret layers stylistically are going to be like sort of challenging for people and like they're not all going to be sort of, you know, the thing you want. And especially like even these cards, like, you know, Dig Through Time and Rest in Peace, Ancient Grudge, Lightning Grease, they're not wholly inaccessible cards. So that, of course, they can try whatever thing they like. And I think just by virtue of the fact that people really did love them, and it was actually a small minority like yourself, like me, who didn't like them and for who this was maybe a little bit too much in that direction, exactly goes to show that, yes, that principle still is in, you know, it still is there. Like, for the people who love it, go nuts, go fucking crazy, buy the shit out of it, absolutely. I think for me, what the difference was between the meta of this and the meta of the Prime Slime with the Cyclonic Rift is kind of what you said about how it's not a reference on the game. It is the reference of like real people and real dogs, which it's like Nvinuril's Disc. So for people who don't know, Nvinuril's Disc, the enchantment that acts as like a board wipe and blows everything off, is Larry Niven backwards. And Larry Niven used to work for Wizards of the Coast. And even Wizards of the Coast, there are people in there, game designers, who hate that card, who've gone on record as saying that that's a really silly reference that they wish wasn't in the game. So maybe the Secret Lairs is where this needs to go. Like, it is a secret lair. Mm. It's not in a mainline set.
Yeah, no, for sure. And also, for anyone who struggled to say Neverineal ever before, now you understand why it was such a bastard word, because it was kind of forced. And it's that thing of when you have that, when it's pushed us enough that you notice it, it kind of then, that's when I feel like it grates a little. I don't know. Also, why wasn't there a reference of All Dogs Go to Heaven and Rest in Peace? Considering
that the
ancient
Grug film, that's the second time.
It's so good. And also, what's funny is Ancient Grudge. There is literally a scene in All Dogs Go to Heaven 2 where one of the dogs barks at a mirror like this and sneezes into it, and it is hands down the funniest scene of my childhood. And that's again, as much as I'm annoyed that it did pull in real world inspiration and everything, it then did also make me smile. So maybe, I don't know, maybe the pug isn't so bad. But yeah, I mean, in general, I've softened up on them. But I did have to kind of figure out why I didn't like them in the first place. And I think there is an argument to be said as to why, and then maybe they should be aware not to go too far with it.
I think just to kind of cap it off, I think just the reason for me personally why I didn't gel is because whereas the Cats one was still twee and kitsch, it was done so in such a stylistic way, like the art choice, like the chibi art style and the hyper cutesy realism of it. Whereas this is just on the cusp of being like almost too normal, and it's just cute. It's not cute and stylized. But I mean, that's my personal opinion. And I think it's a bit like the free speech argument. If we have to defend things like Prime Slime and the Tattoo Pack, some people really didn't like the Tattoo Secret Lairs. If we have to defend their right to be creatively there, we also have to defend the right of every dog has its day. So if you like it, there's obvious reasons why to like it. Me and Nathan are being grumps, but...
Yeah, none of them are actually dogs. They're all really good staples. Like, don't get me wrong, that's something we didn't even talk about. Like, all of the cards in both sets are cards that people will play, and they're active like cards that you might want for your collections. But none of the cards of the four are actually dogs.
I think the reason they've done that is because they have done a lot of dogs recently in M21 and Jumpstart, and they knew they were going to do this secret lair. So obviously that's marketing sync up, but I think the reason they've done that is because of Commander, they want to have a product where if people want to do a dogs deck, they can get these staples which will fit into a dogs deck. other than Dig Through Time, I think they all go into the Cat Dog Commander. So I think that's why they've done it.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And every dog does have its day, you know. Every dog does have its day. So they did. It's almost like a meta call on the name of the product as well.
It's amazing how we like did 5 minute rant about how people need to chill up about secret lairs, and then we immediately went into a secret lair that we whinged about.
That's our MO, to be fair. We did this with the Double Masters. We complained about people complaining and then complained. So
yeah,
I think it's just what we do. I think we're magic players, Andy. It's what we do.
Oh, we're terrible. Should we just quit and play Yu-Gi-Oh?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it. Right. So welcome to Yu-Gi-Oh! The Flavoring.
Oh, man. I summoned Exodia and it was awesome. Did they say summoned? I don't even know.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Simon, that's still correct. Yeah. They stole that from us. Yeah.
So, next up, Commander Collection Green. So this is where things get quite interesting. Secret Lairs, are obviously, they come all the time. This is Commander Collection Green. This is where we start getting to the nitty-gritty. So, Commander Collection Green got spoiled last year. I think it was October last year. I could be wrong, where Gavin Verhey won.
I think it's the same time as this week, because we had this Tuesday coming will be the set release for the next year, and I think they did the same thing last year, and the last thing that they said about was the Commander Green and Zendikar Rising.
Okay, well, so, but Gavin Verhey went on to the Command Zone podcast and basically was advertised the year of Commander that was going to be 2020, before we also realised that 2020 was going to be a bin fire almost entirely in the rest of our lives. They were hopeful for a year of Commander, the format where you absolutely have to play with other people there in front of you because there's so many board states, and then we can't do that. So Commander Collection Green was one of the things that was spoiled. They only released two artworks for it. So they released one artwork of what seemed to be some sort of elemental, and they released another artwork of Yisan, the Wandering Bard, on a card art. And they were like, guess what cards are going to be in Commander Collection Green? So the cards that are going to be in Commander Collection Green are Freyalise, Slanoir's Fury, Omnath, Locus of Rage, Bane of Progress, Seaborn Muse, which was the elemental that they showed as the sort of spoiler artwork, which is something that people did guess quite quickly. They also guessed that the Azusa crown was in the Seaborn Muse artwork. So they thought, well, maybe Azusa is going to pop up in this Commander Collection, which, you know, in the flavor text of the Seaborn Muse, but didn't actually pop up as a card itself. And then they have Sylvan Library, Worldly Tutor, which was the Yisan the Wandering Bard artwork, which people thought were maybe going to be Court of Calling, was one that people said. People thought maybe it was just going to be a reprint of Yisan. But yeah, it was Worldly Tutor. And then we have Sol Ring and Command Tower, which are not green cards, but the Sol Ring has a artwork by Joseph Meehan, which is a completely new artwork for Sol Ring, and paints the Sol Ring less as an artifact of steel, but it seems to be made out of a tree stump. And the flavor text references that a new sun is born in the forest. So it's giving Sol Ring a much more like elemental, like world soul feel, as opposed to an artifact that traps a star, which is what every other Sol Ring is. And the Command Tower by Joseph Meehan. The artwork doesn't necessarily scream green mana to me, but the flavor text references Garruk. It's a quote from Garruk Wildspeaker, so that's kind of ties into the green stuff. I'm pretty happy with Commander Collection Green. I think it's going to be rad. I think it's all very cool.
I don't know how they could have made a better all-round product. Freyalise and Omnath, as much as they're not as impressive to me because I own both the cards, are actually a little bit more harder to get hold of. It's nice to see Freyalise get a new artwork that's a little bit more ethereal. Omnath, yeah. I think, realistically, is going to have a big role. And if he doesn't, it's weird that they've set him up again because it's new flavor text as well. I think it's quite clever. I also am so happy that they've brought kind of Kamigawa, because what I've said is, well, we're not going back to Kamigawa, deal with it. That's what this set is. It's like, here, you get a little bit of flavor, we're not going back. You're just going to get like little like collection hints at, because there are some really clever flavor notes in here alongside having a very good collection. And if it is at any kind of reasonable price, these will sell like hot cakes.
Yeah, so the Sylvan Library is the Kamigawa reference. So there's an artwork by Brian Soller, who's a relatively new artist, actually. They've only done about sort of a handful of cards. One of the recent ones is Fighters 1 from Ikoria. And the artwork in Sylvan Library features Reki, History of Kamigawa, who's a legend from Kamigawa. God, I can't talk today. So they've obviously realized that because Reki's not really played in any other format other than Commander, So they've kind of brought in these characters, like Yi-San as well, and obviously Frailes being a planeswalker that doesn't see any play outside of Commando, because it was Commando-made planeswalker. So they've really leaned heavily into the flavor thing. And yeah, just having these characters on the artworks is really cool. The Frailes Slanoir's Fury artwork is by Kieran Yana, and gives a really new perspective on Frailes. Like, she seems a lot more... I don't know, man, she seems... Not evil's the word, but she seems a lot more... not badass. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, because she's pretty badass.
It's the eye patch. You just put an eye patch on anyone and suddenly they look kick-ass.
But she had that in her original artwork. She still looks kick-ass, right? But I just think in this one, she's just got a slightly different look, which is still very much Frailes, but is also like just kind of gives her a new sort of flavor. I really love that Seaborn Muse has got a completely different look. So now it's like a full-on elemental look to it, as opposed to the sort of human-y spirit which we got in the kind of classic artwork for Seaborn Muse. And again, as you say, there is a Kamigawa reference in there with Azusa, Lost But Seeking. So yeah, really, really cool. Really, really like
there was people that complained about why Sylvan Library was just two dudes. For those that don't know, Reki, the History of Kamigawa, was called as such because he scribed the History of Kamigawa in tattoos onto his body. And when he died, they then transcribed those into a book to give the History of Kamigawa. So what you're seeing is a literal library, because the bards and the were literally covered in the history of the world. And if you think about it, back in the day when you didn't have books and things to write down, the only way you could have libraries, these stories, were your sages, were your elders that would pass stories in between across each other. They were human libraries. So that anyone who's criticizing this going, well, there's not really any books or anything going on, well, that's the kind of reason why they've done this. And the fact they didn't even do any flavor text to kind of, I guess it's not necessarily a trap, because it's not going, oh, well, if you don't know, you don't know, and you've missed out on the flavor, but it kind of might give you more reason to go and find out. And it's a nice hint, which I think is quite clever.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is one of those products where you don't have to buy it, right? I mean, obviously, there are staples in here which are quite hard to get hold of, so it's good that they put them in this product. I mean, there are people already predicting the price on this is actually going to be quite a bit higher than people were hoping for, because this is kind of akin to the spellbooks for Planeswalkers. But I think it's going to be quite a bit more expensive than that. I mean, if I'm honest, I would have liked flavor text on there just to give some people a hint, because you're right, this particular bit of lore is a bit of a high bar to entry, especially for newer players. But yeah, I can see why they didn't. One of the really cool flavor bits that got pointed out, and I think it was Jay and Ellie on Twitter pointed this out when I saw it, is that the Bane of Progress artwork by Grzegorz Rotowski, which is a name that I struggle to say quite a lot of time, so the artwork is an elemental. It's like a tree folk elemental, it looks like, eating a construct, like an automaton, like a robot. And the robot is very, very similar in its look to the token that Khan, Scion of Urza, and Urza, Master Artificer, create their actual cards, like the actual token that they create. Mm-hmm. It's a very similar look to that automaton, which is kind of cool. So it kind of ties it all in together. And I think the flavor text alludes that it's during the time of Urza that this Bane of Progress exists. Argos, isn't it? Yeah. So yeah, very, very cool. Nice little tie in there.
I think the last good bit of flavor is on Command Tower. We have Garrick Wildspeaker chatting about how absolute power is the only true authority. And all I've got for like underneath this is why Garrick bad? And the reason I put this is because I think that this might hint at, you know how if we go back like to one of the flung things that they said back in the day was that Eldraine was kicking off a larger story arc again. Now, I'm still standing by the fact I think that was the beginning of Garrick's new journey, a new story. And I think this is a hint at the fact that, don't worry, we haven't just gone, hey, he's back, and then forgotten about him. I think this is showing a side of green where he hasn't lost that Garrick-ness, because we didn't really find out much about, we didn't know too much about his personality or anything, but this idea of absolute power, this Vorinclex style of green, I think is the way that green should go for someone like Garrick, as opposed to Nyssa being a bit more tree-huggy and a bit more willing to be at one with nature. I think this whole idea of apex predator aspects of Garrick, I think is quite nice. And I think this might hint at the idea that we will see more of him in the next few sets going forwards.
I agree. So overall, Commander Collection Green seems to be functionally and flavorfully a bit of a win. And as long as the price, I mean, I don't want to have no idea what people's kind of perceptions of what is affordable is, right? For me personally, I mean, there's a lot of money in this Commander Collection because of things like Sylvan Library and Worldly Tutor. But I kind of feel like it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? I'm not MTG finance guy, but I sort of think the reason that this product, people are worried it's going to be expensive, is because those cards are hard to get hold of. But once, if they print this thing into submission, they won't be hard to get hold of, and people will be able to have these cards at a reasonable price. So it's kind of like, you know, it's the ebb and flow of the finance market, right? I kind of really hope that this is not going to be $100 or more.
Yeah, I hope it's around 40, change. Like around about £5/dollars, depending on where you are, or euros, I suppose, as well. About five per cards, I think it's reasonable, considering some are more and some are less. Getting a new version of Sol Ring and a new version of Command Tower, which are staples across most decks, I think a fiver per card, I think, is fair, and I think it will sit between 30 and 50, hopefully. And then if it does get printed to death, that will drop down again. But I think, initial pricing, I'd say, is about that. They are also, for intents and purposes, we haven't mentioned, they are doing a foil version of this as well, which will, of course, be more expensive.
Sure. So just before we move on, just want to talk about the inclusion of Sol Ring and Command Tower just in terms of other products they may do. Say if they do a full cycle of Commander collections, so they do the other four colours, do you think they're going to put a Command Tower and a Sol Ring in each one with new flavour text art?
I feel like it would be an injustice not to, but at the same time, you are then taking up two extra slots. But green has a bevy of Commander staples, and I don't know anyone who's going, oh, why wasn't this in there? Or why wasn't this in here? Like, so I think doing six prominent staples or six prominent cards that are hard to get hold of, and then doing the two standard Commander cards. Again, imagine having a collection of five different Sol Rings and each one has a different flavour based on each colour. I think that's fine. Same with Command Tower. And because, again, these are cards that can go in any deck, you don't just want a green version if you've got a mono blue deck. You know, you don't want a Garruk Wildspeaker flavour text on your mono red goblin deck, you know? I guess you wouldn't play Command Tower in that anyway, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it would be weird if they didn't. I think it kind of sets a precedence that they're willing to print things like Command Tower and Sol Ring into the ground so they become more accessible, which is exactly what these products should be doing anyway.
For sure. Cool. All right. Well, that was Commander Collection Green. Now we move on to the big one.
Yeah.
Commander Legends. Oh, baby. This is something that we've been waiting for a long time. Again, Gavin Verhey, this was, along with Commander Collection Green, something he spoiled on Command Zone in that episode where he chatted about the future of Commander. He released a couple of artworks for Planeswalkers that we were going to see and characters that we were going to see. So he released an artwork for Baron Sangir. So we were pretty sure we were going to get a Baron Sangir creature card. And he also released a Planeswalker art. He didn't say it was a Planeswalker art, but the way that it was...
The aspect ratio was very clear. Yeah.
Yeah, it was very clear that it was a Planeswalker, and people very quickly discerned that it was going to be Jeskar, who's a very old character from Magic. We did get a few cards. We saw a couple of preview artworks as well throughout the year. We got a couple more, but now we've actually got some cards under our belt. Before we move on to what cards are in there, let's just run through what we now know about Commander Legends, because they released some specs about it. So it's going to be a booster box is going to have 24 packs per box, so more in line with like a master set. There are going to be 20 cards per pack, two legendaries and two foils, which is quite a bit more than most booster packs. If you draft this, because it is a draft format, you get to draft two cards at a time. So a little bit like how you would draft Double Masters, but that was more for just the rares, I think. You could draft.
Yeah, make sure you don't get shafted.
Yeah, exactly. You are going to be building. So this is where things start to get different from how people thought they were going to be. So before I move on, so people thought this was going to be a draft format where you would be drafting a literal Commander deck. A little bit how you draft a Commander cube. I don't know if anyone's seen the Game Nights episode with Brandon Sanderson, where he's got his own Commander cube. But you basically draft a whole 100-card Commander deck, right? So that's what people thought they were going to be doing. This is going to be a 60-card draft format, which kind of makes sense, and actually I'm not too fussed about that. It's designed for 8-person pods, although you can do it in 6, so they are expecting people to split off into 2 4-player multiplayer pods, or do a big 6-player game. That's also what they said.
Good God.
I know. It's not a singleton format. This is the thing that really annoyed people, some people. I'm not too fussed about it. It's not a singleton format, so you will be able to have multiples of each card in your deck, which obviously kind of goes against the kind of biggest tenet of Commander, right?
This was very well justified by the fact they said that because you draft face down, it would be really difficult. Imagine if you'd forgotten about this card that you had already picked. You pick it a second time, and then you've essentially wasted your second pick of pack 3 because you forgot you already picked out the removal spell earlier. And I think they did a lot of... One thing we'll preface is they did a upload of testing for this, so they know what does and doesn't work. They've clearly made adjustments accordingly. We'll talk about that a lot going forward, because there's a few different things that affects, but they clearly have worked the format to be the most playable it can be. So as much as people might gripe, at least it is a playable format and not, you know, jank.
Yeah, for sure. There are 71 new legends, 40 of which are going to be mono-coloured partners. So not partner with. They've actually brought back the terrorising partner mechanic, which is something that people have lost their ever-loving shit over, because partner, classically, and it was only printed in one commander set, partner is one of those mechanics in Commander that people love it, people hate it, but whatever your sort of thoughts and feelings on it, it can prove to be almost game-breaking in terms of what it can do. And 40 new... And the thing which people were like, oh no, is that these aren't just going to be partners within the 40 of this set. They're going to be able to partner with all of the 2014 partners as well, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's just as a quote, that's not including the Prismatic Piper, which we'll talk about in a second. That's now 1380 different partner combinations.
Yeah,
that is Ooh. Insane. But yeah,
they said in the design article when they released a lot of this information that they quoted literally, I think it's Gavin Verhees, the design lead on this, he quoted that they didn't want to end up with another Thrasios and Vile Smasher combo. So they were very, very, very careful in their own eyes to almost depower or make sure there was nothing in there that, you know, if you partnered up with one other legendary, it was just going to be the most broken thing possible. But I mean, how can you test for that?
Yeah, because you've got to test every combination. Like, even the one thing I thought of was like, poor EDH Rec, how are they even going to do this? You know, how do they exactly? They're going to have to do one of these things where you click one, then click the other, and it forwards you to a screen. I don't even know how they're going to do it. But yeah, like, how can you test for across all of them without just deliberately nerfing things into the ground and being like, well, we played it safe, guaranteed? Because even then, if you play it super safe, there might be the one breakout, and at that point, you've not pushed the other cards, and maybe they'll be. This is a really interesting design conversation, because I'm glad they did it. And again, they said they tested it heavily, so clearly it does work in their eyes. I mean, they're not, you know, like omnipotent. They don't know how to like predict the future. But I also think it's probably pretty hard to design cards like Thrasios and Timna, like, again, because they made such a mistake with them. Going monocolor for one is really, really important. And I also think they probably gave them quite narrow abilities. So it wasn't just, hey, you can draw, as long as you get infinite mana, you can draw your deck. Or, hey, let's draw 3-4 cards a turn for you. You know, that kind of thing. So I hope, with fingers crossed, they've at least managed to keep the same. I think it's the same argument with Planeswalkers. If we make a Planeswalker too powerful, it's ubiquitous. It goes in every deck and it ruins the format. If you make a Planeswalker really niche and powerful, it's not only cheaper, it can go in only a few decks and it can still do something impressive, but it's not everywhere. So I hope that's what they did. And they kept the power level up, but kept the mechanics niche. I think inevitably something will break.
Something will break, but we will see. I mean, there's only 71 new legends, and that's just new, by the way. I don't know if I made that one clear. So there are legends in this set which will be reprints of things that we've already seen. So this is going to be bonkers. There's over 111 legends for definite, which is going to be crazy. There are going to be showcase frames, stretched art, and etched foils. So these are all the different kinds of promo like cards you can get. So etched foils is the thing that is new. So basically, an etched foil is, I would say, from the looks of it, it's most akin to how they used to do the foiling on old border cards. So the foiling is actually on the frame as opposed to the text box and picture. It seems to have like kind of a 3D effect, like the shadowing that they're using in the card frame makes it kind of pop a little bit more than just a flat foil. Yeah, fine. I'm always up for new foiling techniques. I'm one of these people that even when foils are bad, I think they're kind of interesting. For my money, the best foils that have been out in recent years, and this one is a huge debate, like some people, like people have all different kinds of opinions on this. My personal preference is the foiling that they've used throughout Eldraine and Ikoria. The Eldraine foils, especially when they're in the showcase, are mind-bogglingly good. Like, they pick up all the right highlights, and the lands, because all the lands had the little glowy orbs in a lot of the art, which you see in Eldraine, all these kind of little fairy lights, they look stunning. The problem with that foiling process is that some people have noticed that there's kind of like a thatched effect on the card art, so the way they printed it, you can actually see kind of like where the sort of the ink is there, where in other foils it's a lot smoother and a bit more matte. I don't know if I personally mind that, but yeah, I'm sure people will be upset about this etch foiling.
Yeah, but there's different ways, obviously, because I think they did ones like in the Relic, like the from the Vault series, where it was the entire card, and that entire sheen kind of made it feel too plasticky. It didn't give it enough texture, enough depth.
It was like a Pokemon foil. Yeah,
exactly. Whereas this is the flip side. This has actually got some texture to it. It almost feels slightly different when you touch it, kind of thing, which I think is absolutely fine. I do think, yeah, as you said, I think they've gone through so many different foiling processes. I think Innistrad was one of the worst. Second, going to Innistrad was the worst because everything looks so muted and so dull. And I think obviously they have to keep trying different layering processes. I mean, back in Rise of the Eldrazi, I think it was Stagger Shock that came out, was still to this day one of my favourites because, one, okay, it's Raymond Swanman artwork and it had lightning and obviously it picked it up. And as you say, when it highlights certain aspects instead of just doing a blanket foiling, I think that's where it really shines. But you know, the whole point is that It should feel like it's celebrating the artwork, not just going, yeah, cool, here's some shininess.
I think I have a foil Stagger Shock when it got reprinted. Was it in Ultimate Masters? It might have been.
Maybe, yeah.
Anyway,
but the interesting thing about the etch thing is they're only doing it on 32 cards. Now, there are 32 different colour combinations. So, here's the interesting thing. If they do one of each of them, does that mean they're reprinting the four colour legends like Breyer and Yidris and all those people? Or are they going to, Tin Hat Foil Fairy, are they going to reprint an Errata the Nephilim?
I
really hope so. Because they've reprinted Breyer fairly recently. They printed literally in Double Masters. And they didn't do any of the other ones.
Well,
it'd be weird if they did it two in a row, you know?
The etched foil that they showed off, the card that they showed it off for, so we'll go down the list of cards in just a second, but it was Prosh Sky Raider of Kerr, which is a commander that they're reprinting. Three colours, so he's in Jund. So you may have some credence to that theory. I don't think they'll do the Nephilim. If they do, it'll be pretty rad, but I don't know if they will. They're not really big into a rattering unless it's a problem.
I know, but I think a lot of people have asked for so long. And again, if it's every colour combination, unless they make five new four-colour commanders, which they've already said before are really hard to design, because it's a lot harder to design being blackless than designing, you know, a black card, because it's really hard to go, well, how do you identify four colours and missing one of them without it being really shoehorned in, you know, like with Brave, for example, just being like, well, green's the least artifacty colour, so let's make it an artifact. An artifact creature that has three abilities, each of which look to do a different kind of colour thing. Unless you shoehorn it in like that. I mean, I just think it's a golden opportunity to do so. And I think it's more that as soon as I saw the 32, I'm like, well, realistically, Breyer literally just got reprinted. I don't think they'd have reprinted her in Double Masters if they were going to also reprint her in Commander Legends, because I think they're already doing it to kind of give a look, so there's a bit more product availability. And they could have done that with any other card, and they didn't. So, I'm fingers crossing it, because it means we might get new artwork, and it means that all the people that have wanted to play Nephilim as their commander for so long now will have an opportunity to do so. And I think like Commander Legends, giving us legendary creatures of cards we already had that weren't legends that everyone wanted to. I think it's universal. I don't think there's anyone out there that'd be annoyed they are at Nephilim, you know?
Sure.
So I feel like it would be a win-win.
It's a good theory. I've never heard that one before. We'll see. I mean, we'll have to see. They could do anything they wanted, right? So we'll kind of see what they do. So the cards that they spoiled. So they've given us a whole bunch of cards which are now actually in the set that gives us an idea of where they're going direction-wise. So we have Sengir, the Dark Baron. So this isn't a reprint of Baron Sengir. This is a new Baron Sengir card, art by Bastian Elderhame. Sengir, the Dark Baron. There's also a preview card version by Pete Venters. Pete Venters being the classic Wizards of the Coast artist who did the original Baron Sengir art. The story goes that he saw that they were redoing Baron Sengir, like he got caught wind that they were doing it. And he was like, cool, can I do the artwork for it? They'd already had an artwork for it. So they actually made the preview card for him. They were like, well, we can do like a promo version and we can get you to do that art. So he's had another crack at doing that character because he really wanted to do it. It's a very cool story. We have Prismatic Piper, art by Seb McKinnon. This is one of the artworks that we already kind of knew about. Halana Kessig Ranger and Elena Kessig Trapper. We called it. We fucking called it. So in an episode, if you are a long-time listener, it was about five episodes ago, we did our characters on flavor text episode, where we looked at all different cards, picked out all the characters that had only appeared in flavor text and some that had appeared in stories and were ones that we would be interested in seeing in cardboard, and also edged out some of them that we think will be in cardboard in the future, or at least should be. And these two characters were the ones that we spent the most amount of time talking about. We fucking did it. I'm actually genuinely like really hyped for this, because We didn't get all the details right, so I re-listened to the episode recently. We said that, so Halana and Alenna are two, if you don't know, are two characters from Innistrad that are essentially werewolf hunters. That's a kind of their MO. They're also a big part of representation in the game because they're a gay couple, so we were kind of interested to see Watsy maybe claw back a bit of credibility and actually like paying some more representation in the game. And we said that we wanted them to be partnered with. We wanted them to be two separate cards as opposed to one card, two characters. We thought that Halana was going to be green-white and Alenna was going to be green-red. And I don't know if we really looked at their abilities, but we kind of said, you know, ranger, trapper, these are things that probably won't be creature types, but could be represented with other creature types. And we almost got there. So obviously we didn't know that partner with wasn't going to be the thing and its partner, because who the fuck was going to predict that partner was going to come back, right? That's just crazy. But they are partners. They're not partner with. So they don't necessarily need to be with each other. We said that, obviously we said both of them were going to be green. Halana's green. She's not green-white, but was still green. That was kind of a good call for their colors. And Alenna, we said, was going to be green-red. She's not green, but she is red. So we're kind of, I'd say we're about sort of 65 to 75% there. So their creature types as well. I'm just going to bring up their card arts. So their creature types is the Trapper. Alenna, Kesev Trapper, is a human scout. Seems quite on par. And then Halana Kesig Ranger is a human archer, which I think is pretty fitting. And she does have a bow and arrow in her card art. Yeah, man. I'm pretty stoked.
These are really cool. Do you know what's really interesting? Only one of them got flavor text. Alenna got flavor text saying that she has an unbreakable bond with Halana. Halana apparently doesn't feel as strongly about it because she didn't get any flavor text. It's also interesting to think that... So Alena's ability, she taps to add a red to your mana pool equal to the power of the last creature to enter the battlefield. And she's more likely to be partnered outside of Halana, and yet she's the one who states her unbreakable bond. I think there's a slight, I don't know if there's an irony there or something. It's quite amusing to think that only one of them states their undying love for the other one. The other one's like, we're thinking about it.
Magic players will find a way to mechanically ruin any bit of flavor that they didn't
say. Saying that, we've got Gruul friends back again, and as much as Nissa and Shana didn't pan out, it's quite nice to have the opportunity. I put in this, is this Andy's new Gruul friends deck? I know you've been wanting to make a Gruul deck for a while. Are you looking potentially?
Now, so this was my roller coaster of emotions with these two characters, because at first I literally gasped when I saw the cards. I'm not ashamed to admit it. I audibly gasped.
And shock the issue face.
My wife on the sofa across from where I was sitting just went, "Oh my god, what's happened?" And I went, "They've released these two cards that I was really excited about." And she rolled her eyes. So that was my starting point. I was super hyped. And then I got really excited because that meant that I sort of knew that they were going to be Commander Legends spoilers, because these were the first ones that I saw pop up on my newsfeed. And then I got a little bit deflated because I've been wanting a Gruul or a Jund werewolf commander for long. Yeah. I'm not the only one, right? I'm not going to go too deep into it. There's about 50 hours worth of me spouting this shit. But I don't think in Commander Legends, even with like over 100 legendary creatures, there's going to be creative or flavor room for them to have two Gruul-based Innistrad werewolf-associated characters in these two hunter characters, and then for them to do a Gruul-based werewolf legendary creature. I just don't think that's something they will do. If they can prove me wrong, and I'll be happy. And if they go Jund or any different colors, they could go completely wild and do like
Teemo,
a
whatever.
Yeah, fine. I just I think it's so much less likely now, having seen these two commanders.
I mean, Magical Christmas Land is that they print one that has in a flavor text about how he's been tracked by Halana and Alenna for years, and they've been trying to find him and they can't, and that's why they're in the set as well as him in the set. So it could be Tolvalar or something like that, and they are in the... I mean, that's Magical Christmas Land. I know what you mean. I feel like it does sit in the same flavour notes to have... I mean, I just think it would be really amazing, and it would be such a home run to have werewolf hunters that people wanted forever in a set hunting a werewolf that people
that would
wanted
be good.
Forever. I mean, again, that's probably unlikely. As you say, I don't think that they necessarily will do that. But the fact that these are, yes, fair enough, they're not partner with, so these aren't even automatically a Gruul pairing of legends. So they can be considered individually. At that point, it does put a little bit more fanning of the flames towards having a Gruul werewolf commander. But then also the double-sidedness, maybe it's not a flip card. If it's not a flip card, would it feel like a werewolf? These are questions for other people to answer. But, you know, I know what you mean. I see where you're coming from. I think this might finally be my Gruul deck. I love partners, but then saying that, there's another 38 of them in the set, so I might sure. just I might just be a puddle on the floor by the end of it, not knowing what to do with myself.
I did have this discourse about the them not having now a werewolf commander in the set because of the colours. I had this conversation on Twitter with a few other content creators, and some of them did point out that actually it wouldn't necessarily even need to be a flip card. It could be like an Immerwolf commander,
yeah,
where they basically just staple the Immerwolf ability onto a commander, and or it's like a wolf spirit or something along those lines, which actually I wouldn't be too fussed about. It doesn't need to be a werewolf per se. It just needs to facilitate werewolves in a flavorful way. So yeah, we will see. Okay, moving on down the line. That was Helana and Elena. That was our big win for validating our musings. We have now the... They finished off the cycle of the Battle Bond dual lands. So you've got Rejuvenating Springs, Spectator Seating, Training Center, Undergrowth Stadium, and Vault of Champions. Some really big names as well for the artists. You've got Elena Danner, Jen Ravenna, Damiel Lundgren, Yong Hao Han, and Cliff Childs. So all pretty big names as well in Magic. Mm-hmm. Even though some of them are a bit newer, like Elena Danner and Jen Ravenna, like the art they've done is bonkers good. So really cool. People have been wanting this cycle completed. So in Battle Bond, you had the you had the two color lands that they entered untapped if you had two or more opponents.
Which yeah, obviously the allied versions of these.
So this is now the rounding off. Fucking about time. That was 4 years ago. That was 4 years ago.
You know what's really funny is as soon as they printed these five, the first thing that people did was complain about how they didn't also reprint the allied ones in the set. And they're like, oh, well, those are still difficult. I was like, can you not literally spend 2 seconds enjoying something before you don't like the other? I get it. They're difficult to get hold of and they're super sought after. But yes, this has been a long time coming. And these are actually really super flavorful. I think this gives us some of the best flavor for Kylum that we've ever seen, because before we didn't really know if Allah's Reach was the only part of the plane, you know, the above the clouds. We didn't really see anything, but Undergrowth Stadium literally states in the flavor text about how you have to battle your way up to Valor's Reach. You know, there are like sub areas, and like I guess it's like a tournament scene, isn't it? And you don't get up to the premiership until you know get through division.
Yeah, yeah. I think I kind of feel like it's because it's based off of esports, right? And a lot of people have also drawn parallels between Battle Bond and wrestling. Like they wanted like a pro wrestling version of Battle Bond. Like that could be the new flavor in the next one. So it is a little bit like, before you get to WWE, it's you fighting in like TNA or, you know, like being in like the British Wrestling Association or whatever else, and then you get called up to the big leagues. I think that's, I think it's pretty cool. I actually tweeted out about Undergrowth Stadium for that, exactly that reason. I thought it was a very cool idea.
Another really interesting cool thing, Spectator Seating specifically mentions the cheap seats, and it's the Boris one. I feel like that's got to have been deliberate. They must be, that's a bit tongue-in-cheek about saying how the Boris always gets the cheap seats. Also, interestingly, in Vault of Champions, the only ones you can really tell are the Kenriths. They've clearly been lauded and hyped up into the halls of into the Vault of Champions.
Well, I should so fucking think so. Imagine being in a tournament with a bunch of Magic users and you're a Planeswalker and you keep getting beaten. Like, you are literally a reality dimension-bending sorcerer
What do you do against Indersplit? What do you even do against that? You know, they're just there rolling loads of dice and somehow you've taken a million damage from a bloody ogre that can't even see you. You're like, how, what is even happening anymore?
I like, is it Rejuvenating Springs, the Elena Danner artwork. The flavor text there suggests that, because we've always kind of been hinted at with Kylum that it's non-lethal magic. Like there's wards in place in Kylum in the stadiums that means that you can't be killed in these tournaments. Yeah. It's kind
it's
of like,
you,
it's not a blood sport. It's like you're using your magic as potently as possible to like knock them out. It's like Pokemon rules, right? You never kill the other Pokemon, you just faint them.
You've set fire to it, but no, it's only fainted.
Only fainted. So Rejuvenating Springs shows us that outside of the tournament setting that all of the combatants and participants kind of like hang out and it's like an Olympic village, like when all the competitors just kind of chill and like drink loads and shag each other, like, you know, that's kind of what they're doing. That's like a weird phenomenon, by the way. Like in the Olympic Village, like it's kind of notorious for all the athletes from around the world, like getting jiggy. Apparently,
that's
like
because
a thing.
They're creating a master race. They are all the best from all of the different countries of the world. They might as well make beautiful athletic babies. You know, that's fine. It makes sense to me.
I might have heard that on American Dad. I don't know.
Yeah, I think really different. A training center to me, for some reason, doesn't resonate like a magic card. Just as a strange
really?
Note. when I read it, when I looked at it, I was looking through all of them, and I'm like, training center? And also, I love the idea that they do have almost like, you know, the sparring session, like when you're just before you go out on stage or just before you have like your little, like your green room where you're prepping, you know, warming up and everything. I do like that. But I don't know, the word training center just doesn't resonate as a magic card to me.
Oh, I suppose the word center as opposed to training grounds.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah. And obviously they had to be careful because they already have done certain terminologies in the game. But yeah, that was just a note that I have. I have a question mark behind it. It's like, yeah, it just doesn't resonate to me. Whereas the others very much do. It was just curious to see. Maybe they're running out of vernacular that feels mythical.
yeah, they could have done like training hall, something like that.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Again, it's just a note. Just a note for me.
Okay, moving on. They spoiled the Prosh Sky Raider of Kerr with the etched foiling. Keeper of the Accord, artwork by Denman Rook, is another card they spoiled. Any thoughts on Keeper of the Accord?
So this is an interesting one because they've keep making really cool. So we should say what it does. So at the beginning of each opponent's end step, if they control more creatures than you do, you create a 1/1 soldier creature token. At the beginning of each opponent's end step, if they have more lands than you, you search your library for a basic planes, put it onto the battlefield, attach and shuffle your library. It's a 3/4 human soldier for 3 and a white. Very similar to the Cartographer's Hawk. Very similar to I can't remember what it is now. The 3-mana dude that allows you to play lands off the top if someone else controls more lands than you, and then Mangara. The good thing about this is they keep making very clear, obvious staples for Commander to allow White to keep up. The complaint that people are having is that if they keep just doing this one per set in sets that are more difficult to get hold of, this isn't so much, it's a draft format and it'll be probably opened into Oblivion. But if they keep making, you know, over the next 5 years, if they make 20 white stable cards that are just that much better than every other white card, it's much easier in a poorer card pool to have an expected ubiquitous kind of deck choice, whereas something like green, black or blue, you've got choices across your ridiculously cool cards, so you don't have to necessarily go, oh, I have to play Rhystic Study, or I have to play Demonic Tutor, I have options. Whereas with white, it's great that they're giving them options and they're giving them more power and everything, but I think there are a few people going, it's annoying that they keep just doing like one really cool white card a set, when actually now I have to buy that every set there's that white card that I have to buy to be able to keep up. Saying that, you can't help that. It's not something you can guess around. It's not as if they're going to make commons and uncommons that are basically fix white's problems. So it's a good thing they're doing so. It's just something that that people mentioned that, you know, now to be a white player, it's actually kind of getting more expensive because you don't have options to land tax. So that's why land tax is expensive. You know, you don't have options for like, I guess, balances banned. But, you know, that kind of idea. I think it's great, though. I think it's really good that they're doing this. And it's not just now, it's mostly mana. The mana thing is the important thing. And now there are multiple different ways to catch up across the curve as well. So yeah, very good.
Cool. And then last off of the cards that we saw, at least for the ones that I saw, Command Tower and Commander's Sphere, both of which have extended artwork, so they will be getting extended artworks. Obviously not a huge amount to say flavor-wise because we already know about these cards. I'm a bit bummed that neither of them got any sort of new artwork. Like, the don't get me wrong, the Ryan Alexander Lee artwork for Commander's Sphere is iconic, but also this would have been a chance to print a new artwork for a kind of mid-tier Mana Rock, no?
I agree. Yeah, it's not even like, it kind of gets edged out as well. It's not even like prime, like Command Tower is prime land. Command Sphere is not even like a prime rock anymore. Like, it's kind of, because it's a 3-mana one, it's kind of relegated down a little bit. And yeah, it would have been nice to see a slightly different bit of flavor, considering this is one of the few times it's going to get. I mean, I'd be surprised to see it get new artwork in a Commander deck, whereas I was surprised not to get new artwork in this. But beyond that, obviously it's great to have staples printed as much as possible. The fact we're getting Command Tower in this and in the collection, I think, is really, really important.
I was going to say, also, because this isn't a singleton draft format, if you need these for staples, if you need a bunch of Command Towers for decks, you can draft
like 3 or 4 of them. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, very cool. So two things we didn't mention going through: Sengir and the Dark Baron. We didn't say what he does at all, but he gets a 2/+1/+ on counters whenever a creature dies. This harkens back to his original card, which used to give him a +2/+2 counter, one of the weirder counters in Magic. It also does a really cool thing of whenever a player dies, you gain life equal to the amount of life they had at the beginning of that turn, which is kind of interesting, draining their life essence. I think a criticism of this was the fact that this was the first sign that putting partner on a card meant that the card didn't have the same kind of pop, like it didn't necessarily resonate as the Dark Baron that we've been wanting for years. But then obviously it was balanced out by people saying that Partner kind of is its automatic, like a powerful line of text on it. But if you want to play it as a mono black commander, obviously it does then diminish it slightly. And also the Prismatic Piper is an ultra common card because there will be one in every single pack. So just in case you don't draft enough legends, you can have a card that literally can go in any. And basically what it is a 5-mana 3/3. When it comes to play, choose a color. Although at the beginning of the game, you choose a color and it, your commander essentially adds that color to its color identity, and you can partner it with any of the other partners. So it allows you, if you only drafted a red partner and you drafted a load of red and black cards, you name black, and it allows you to play a Rakdos deck with still having the two partner commanders.
Yeah, very cool. So the last little bits of flavor that we can discern from Commander Legends so far. So they showed us the key art for some of the boost packs. Now, we said earlier on that they spoiled a picture for a picture. They spoiled an illustration, a little drawing of Jessica, the Planeswalker, and everyone was very quick to say that it was Jessica. So we kind of know that she's going to be in this set. The key art for the boost box that they showed off was also Jessica, but it wasn't the same picture as far as I'm aware. This one was a Magali Villeneuve Jessica artwork on the key art, so it shows a different version of her. Now, does that mean we're going to get a promo version? Is it just key art? But sometimes they just have key art and it's not actually like you know, anything. I wonder. There are two different Jessica artworks.
Because I tried to look for it as well, and it does look like she's more active. So maybe they've got, maybe it's a signature spell that she's got in the set. Otherwise, maybe she gets an alternate art treatment that, and this is the other artwork for it. Yeah, it's strange. Because obviously, it's on the booster pack, isn't it? So it's hard to kind of understand, because there is no way that the other artwork, like the full scaling one, isn't a Planeswalker artwork. It'd be very peculiar if that was given that aspect ratio just to be a bit of artwork for Jessica. Like, I think that's clearly, you know, supposed to be there to be layered behind an actual card frame. Whereas the other one, obviously we don't actually get any more depth of field or anything. We don't really know exactly how it's working, but she does look more active. Maybe she gets a, you know, Jessica's Wrath spell or something like that. Who knows?
Cool. And then the last bit of spoilers that we're going to talk about today, we're going to do a bit of a cut off and we'll say where we're kind of cutting off when we get there. But the last bit of spoilers that we got this week, we're starting to see stuff properly spoiled for Zendikar Rising. So the first thing that we got, so we already had that Mark Rosewater San Diego Comic-Con panel, which we spoke about at length. We did our kind of like speculation episode. This is the first bit of hard product that we've seen for it. So this is the trailer. It was just a teaser trailer, I think, because the trailers of late have all been sort of roughly around the kind of 1 to 2 minute mark. Like,
yeah,
the
full, I think we're going to get another one.
Yeah, and they usually have some kind of fuller narrative, usually with some kind of pop song that has got a cover like they kind of put underneath it. Whereas this was maybe like a 40-second trailer where it just focused on one thing. So the story of the trailer is the camera pans in on a plant on a cliff edge. We're clearly on Zendikar because we can see Hedrons in the background. And then there's a rock slide. The flower survives the rock slide, and we see the typography of the cliff behind the flower kind of forming out into a big spike. So it's kind of showing that the plane is evolving. We also have a bit of voiceover as well from an unknown quote-unquote character, although we can talk about which character it is. And the voiceover reads, "Born in a spark, forged by betrayal, tempered in silver and silence, I will fulfill my destiny. Zendikar will rise." Pretty cool bit of voiceover, a bit spooky. People thought that this was Nyssa.
And what are these people thinking?
It's Nahiri. It's clearly very, Nahiri,
clearly,
right?
Very clearly and obviously Nahiri.
Tempered in silver and silence is the Hell Vault. Yeah. If it's not the Hell Vault, someone at what's
forged by betrayal, which is with Sorin. Yeah, born. Yeah, everything about it is, I will fulfill my destiny is the interesting one, though, because people can't decide of whether or not that's her being like nice or nasty, because I think a lot of people also saying they don't really want her to do an about face. If we've seen her kind of antagonistically, and it would be kind of weird for her to suddenly be like, right, cool, I've chilled out now. I think the idea is that, as we said in our predictive episode a few weeks ago, I think it'll be interesting to see Nahiri and Nyssa tackling what's best for Zendikar from their both, like, because both of them, neither of them know about each other particularly, and both of them have their own reasons to think that they are the savior and defender of Zendikar. So I think that's really interesting. The fact that it's a county flower is interesting, because it was rumored within the lore to come to revive the land. So the idea is that it kind of shows this idea of rebirth. which is very interesting. Beyond that, we don't really get much more. But I think it's also nice to know that Nahiri will have a big part of this. And considering the name of the card that we will just about we'll talk about, it does seem that she's going to have that whole, I've known things for so long and I know things about Zendikar that obviously Nyssa has no idea about, but then Nyssa has a greater personal connection to the World Soul. I think that's going to be a really cool juxtaposition between both trying to do something positive and I think both ultimately hurting the plane.
I think it's one of those situations where I think some of the most... what's the word I'm talking about? What am I even trying to say? Well, some of the most popular planes in Magic, right, from a storytelling perspective, are usually the ones that have sort of some kind of anti-hero aesthetic to it. The thing I'm trying to get at is somewhere like Ravnica, for example. Although some of the guilds in Ravnica are definitely maybe a little bit more evil, quote unquote, than other guilds, none of them are particularly righteous and none of them are particularly like the bad guys. They all have their own kind of ebb and flow. Yeah. And the same with other like Tarkir, people like Tarkir, because even though it was like humans v dragons in Dragons of Tarkir, and it was like some of the clans are maybe a bit more cruel than others, again, it has that kind of aspect of, well, everyone is needed to kind of keep the plane going. So those are why those planes are successful. So I think if you were to do a case where it was, you know, Nyssa is good and Nahiri's bad or vice versa, it's just going to be another classic like, oh, well, we're going to root for the hero, I suppose. Whereas, yeah, if we have Nahiri and Nyssa being equally able to claim their right to Zendikar with, and it seems like we're still correct, we've yet to be disproven about Jace being there, but kind of being in the background, then yeah, I think that's going to be much more successful. Yeah,
my headcanon is Jace is on holiday, just having some fun after. He's like, oh, I'm not the guild pact anymore. I'm going to go and chill out for a bit. And then he just finds himself between two warring mamas, you know, just going crazy at each other.
Well, so this was where, when we originally did the outline for this episode, this is where we stopped and where we went, cool, this is enough. And then if we get any spoilers, we'll carry on. But there were some Planeswalker reveals about 2 days ago, because we were a bit late in recording this one. And we will have to talk about them. This is where we're probably going to cut off. We do now know that there are some set details about Zendikar. And we know that on Tuesday, which you'll be listening to this on, there will be even more spoilers and actual proper card spoilers as well. So you will know more than us. But this is where we're going to stop for today. So let's just talk about the two Planeswalkers that got spoiled. So firstly, let's talk about Jace Mirror Mage. So Jace Mirror Mage is, we'll talk about what they do, is a one blue-blue. For a 4 loyalty Jace Planeswalker, it has Kicker 2, which is pretty cool. When Jace Mirror Mage enters the battlefield, if Jace was kicked, create a token copy of Jace Mirror Mage, except it's not legendary, and its starting loyalty is 1. Its +1 is Scry 2, and it has a 0 ability, which is draw a card and reveal it. Remove a number of loyalty counters equal to that card's converted mana cost from Jace Mirror Mage. And the artwork for the regular version, because they have showed us they have shown us promo versions, is by Tyler Jacobson, which is a very cool artist. A Kicker Jace, which can create a token copy of itself. That's pretty bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, when it confirms that Kicker is in the set, I know it's one of the things we aired towards when we were doing our predictive returning mechanics thing. The fact it harkens back to his version in Ixalan, which is something I think people really liked, this idea of him creating illusions of himself, is one of the things we haven't really seen a lot of in his card iterations. Probably because even looking at this card, it's pretty powerful to create copies of Planeswalkers. The fact that what's really interesting is people have said the alternate artwork makes him look kind of really like evilly. And it's funny that his second ability, the 0, which draw a card, remove loyalty counter, which is converted mana cost, is exactly the same ability that Sarkhan the Mad had from Rise of Eldrazi. And so, yeah, I don't think he's going crazy, but it is funny that if he is going crazy, that is literally them trying to show, hey, look, the only other time we've seen that is on a Planeswalker that we literally called Mad.
The regular Tyler Jacobson artwork shows Jace in his kind of adventure gear, which is the gear that we spoke about last time, where it's kind of Jace's more athletic robes. If you can make robes more athletic, this is what they would look like. But yeah, David Raposa. I mean, it's Dave. It's Dave on Twitter, but it's David on the artwork. Did the alternate arts for both Nahiri and for Jace. And I'm going to guess he's probably done one for Nyssa as well. Mm-hmm. These artworks have really split people. So yeah, so the Jace one, we'll talk about the Nahiri one in a minute. So the way that he's kind of arranged the artwork is that in the center of the artwork, you have Jace and his kind of mirror double behind him. And then he's almost created a border in the artwork, which shows Jace doing like adventure-y things. So in the top right-hand corner, he's fighting Carvu. He's also fighting Carvu in the top left. In the bottom left corner, it shows Jace kind of entering some sort of cavern, looking all mystical. Underneath the main bodies of Jace and his double, you have Jace doing like a superhero landing. Which is pretty mental. And then you have him in the bottom right looking out at a bunch of floating rocks. And yeah, the kind of expression and the style of Jace, it looks like it's kind of like his evil doppelganger. Like they both do, both representations of him. I have seen the discourse on Twitter with people talking directly to David Raposo about this, and he said that he's always thought of Jace as being fairly expressionless. So he wanted to try and just put something different on Jace other than moody mind mage, right? So he's... whether it's evil or whether it's just that's just kind of the art style.
Yeah, the comment was, how do you, like, it's really hard to make someone smile with glowing eyes and not look slightly maniacal. Like, I think I think that's the point. And it might be that the one in the back doesn't look quite so evil, and maybe the front third, the one who's facing outwards, that's the clone. So maybe it does have a slight less humanistic quality to it. I mean, yeah, again, he says like he just wanted to give him some expression. And I think that's something we've wanted for a while, is Jace not just to look like some moody frat boy. I think it's quite, again, it might just not be helped. And also when you, once you start getting used to it, yeah, he just looks a bit smug. You know, I don't think he looks evil. I mean, people are comparing him to like a blue Tybalt, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's it. It's like, yeah, people are saying it looks like Tybalt's wearing a Jace costume.
And I guess the interesting thing as well is that the artwork itself, if you get the full art by itself, you can see the bottom three panels. Cause it's almost like Saga, you know, where they show like Elspeth Conker's death or Gerard's triumph, where it kind of shows like a story and relief. The problem is the text box kind of covers those three. So even though it's a really interesting art style, and yes, it's divisive, some people don't like it, even those that do like it, you don't really get all of it. It's the same complaint I had about the box toppers for Double Masters, of sometimes they hid aspects of the artwork, which I think were key to making that artwork work. And I think this is one of those times of where it's a shame that, yes, okay, it's a translucent text box, but still it cuts out quite a lot of the things and the details. And you don't even get to see the superhero landing.
No.
You know? And it's kind of weird that you don't get to, you've put all this effort and you've essentially got six pictures in one, and three of those pictures you can't even see.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to Nahiri, Heir of Ancients. So it's a 2 red-white for Nahiri Planeswalker for loyalty. +1, create a 1/1 core warrior creature token. You may attach an equipment you control to it. -2, look at the top 6 cards of your library. You may reveal a warrior or equipment card from among them and put them into your hand. Put the rest onto the bottom of your library in a random order. And then a -3, Nahiri, Heir of the Ancients. Deals damage to target creature or planeswalker equal to twice the number of equipment you control. So equipment tribal, warrior tribal, pretty standard for Nahiri, although this one seems to be a bit more building up an army as opposed to just being like a one-woman destruction tour, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think the fact that it kind of denotes, I think we're going to get class tribal in the set. There's a few things, again, that have been mentions that have kind of hinted at some creature typings that I think support that as well. I think the idea is also that because it was an adventure plane, there might be an idea of us going back to like that party idea, the D&D party idea of having clerics and warlocks and all of that nonsense, because obviously they made even warlocks between Eldraine, since Eldraine and warlocks have been a thing, and since before Zendikar we didn't have them before. So I like that idea of maybe doing class tribal. Again, this is where I talk about doing narrow planeswalkers, where I think this is going to be really powerful in the right deck. It's just not universally powerful typically by itself. I'm building a Zerda deck at the moment, and I basically looked at this and went, well, you'll auto include. The interesting thing about Nahiri is Heir of the Ancients. What ancients? Is there something beyond the Eldrazi that used to dwell within Zendikar? Or is this just a callback to her being very old? Because she is, you know, she's millennia years old. And then the last thing that's kind of interesting is that in her alternate artwork, she's got the same kind of thing as Jace, of where she's got different pockets of almost like moments of the story. There is in one of them that you can't see because it's covered up in by the text box, is that if you look to the bottom right on the alternate art, she's kind of lifting what looks to be a luxury ball from Pokemon up, and the joke is that now she puts Sorin in a wall. Sorin got out, so she's going to capture him in a stone Pokeball instead,
right?
Which is, I think, hilarious. It is also interesting to think, what is that weird thing? Because that's not normal. It doesn't look like a Hedron. It's round. Maybe it hints at what she plans to do with the story. I would recommend, if you've seen the alternate artworks, it as a card, go and look at the alternate artworks just as a bit of artwork, because not only do you get to see cool hero pose for the Jace, but you also get to see Nahiri holding a Pokeball. And I think that these will hint at aspects of things that might happen within the set. I'd be surprised if you don't see something like this in the trailer, of where it shows like what they've been doing kind of as flashpoints rather than maybe a little story. But I mean, that's just amusing as I look at it.
Sure.
But yeah, really cool. I think this is a really interesting way of doing art styles and telling a story of a planeswalker, because you're giving like six different visions of them in one card artwork, which is something that people complain about. You only get to see, hey, hero pose, or you only get to say Moody looking over a balcony. You know, you never actually get to see them doing things typically in cards, because it doesn't work for the planeswalker artworks typically.
Sure. Yeah. Anna Steinbauer did the artwork for the just sort of regular version of Nahiri, Heir of the Ancients. I'm really starting to dig Anna Steinbauer. Like, I really liked her work for a long time, but the more planeswalkers she does, because they're not overly stylized. Like, they're fantastical realism, but I just really like the flavor and the kind of subtle touches that she gives to her planeswalkers. Yeah. Anna Steinbauer.
I also like that. Big, like, nice baby sky blue kind of in the background, and also it shows that Seagate has been restored. Mm-hmm. In the back of the Nahiri Heir of the Ancients. So that's a story note as well. That it's also why I reckon Jace is there, is because Seagate was restored, and obviously he's an academic, and I think, you know, he might have gone back for that reason. So it might tie that all together a little bit.
And there we have it. There's all of the spoilers that we got in the past 2 weeks, not including the stuff that we're still getting. I'm really excited. As I said at the top of the episode, I've been a bit down about Magic Story, because I kind of think that's just where the waves of public opinion have been ebbing and flowing, is back to the kind of woe is us, we don't have much Magic Story going forwards, which is incredibly valid. But I'm really stoked. There's a lot of flavor in these cards, and there's a lot moving forward. And it also shows a willingness by Wizards of the Coast to do this kind of stuff and to keep putting in these touches, because I think a lot of the time we're a little bit worried that they're going to start just going for like the low-hanging fruit and the easy kind of, you know, popularism kind of in magic art, and, you know, just doing cutesy things or just doing like big flashy things and not actually worrying about the little details. But it shows that they are worrying about the details, and they're going to keep doing it, which is cool. Mm-hmm.
I also like these little hints where they give like a load of random deets, and then we can kind of speculate what's going to happen from the set off of it, because it's quite, I think it creates the right amount of hype without just going, oh, here's a spoiled card, and then you can get over it, because it's not confirmation, and it kind of, I don't know, to me that's the best way to do it, is just give little drops of information and see what we can run away with in our minds, and how we can be right and wrong. I mean, speculating, I think people have realised, is something that I quite enjoy doing, so it's quite nice. But yeah, should be a really exciting week.
So next week we will probably be doing some sort of episode like this, but with the information that we got moving forwards. We might see what else kind of comes out, because it might not be enough for a whole episode. Guys, we've just released, at time of recording, so it'll be about a week old by the time you're listening to this, we've just released Nathan's Tron Legacy video. Not about the film Tron Legacy, but about the legacy of the legacy of the Tron lands. So Nathan, you wrote a script for a brief history taking you through the print run and flavor that can be found on almost every version of the Tron lands. It is now up on YouTube, and even though our YouTube is a tiny little baby of a channel, in terms baby. Of the yeah little baby in terms of the YouTube channel itself, that video is proving to get a lot of really cool feedback. So if you want to learn about the Tron lands, it's about 10 minutes long. It's probably one of the best videos we've produced.
Editing wise, that has done a fantastic job. It's very impressive.
Oh, thank you. Couldn't do it without a good script. You really dug deep on all the flavor. So guys, I suggest you go check it out. You can find the link to our YouTube Magic the Flavoring in the show notes below. Please go hit that subscribe button, because the more people we get on that channel, the more different kinds of stuff we can start doing, like the Tron histories and like more flavor crackbacks. You can find us on Twitter at MTFlavoring, where we talk to people across the world about flavor, magic lore, design, and just generally all the massive EDH wins or EDH losses that myself and Nathan suffer throughout the week. I did a particularly filthy Zyrus the Riding Storm win the other day, involving a Psychonic Rift, a Seaborn Muse, a Doubling Season, and a Shared Animosity. Suffice to say,
all that fair magic cards.
Yeah, all super flavorful. They're all in there for flavor reasons. If you didn't check out our previous episode, where we did do a full-on flavor deck tech for a Cosmic Horror Urtai the Corrupted EDH deck, please go check that out, because that's something new we're trying, and we'd love to hear your thoughts and feelings on it. My personal Twitter is at Andy Manface. Nathan's, yours is?
At the Fox in the Moon.
Emails go to mtflavoring@gmail.com. Nathan, do you have any final thoughts or feelings?
No, I'm super hype, to be fair. Like, it's quite nice to have spoiler season again. As much as we're complaining at the beginning, there was too much to go through. It's quite nice being at... I like Zendikar a lot, so I think this next week's going to be really exciting. I would say, for all intents and purposes, we're playing our first game together in almost 6 months over webcam today. So that's got me super excited and happy as well. So, yeah, I'm a happy man. I hope everyone else is being really happy out there as well.
Absolutely. Well, guys, other than that, all that remains for me to say is thank you so much for listening. This has been... Magic the Flavoring.
We'll see you soon.